What's up? This is Movies On Up, episode 59. Time to meet the devil. It is also time to meet my devilishly handsome co-host, Mr. Dave Bisella.
That is me.
That's Dave. I'm Ryan. Together, we are Dave and Ryan, or Ryan and Dave. Whatever your preference is, we prefer you to send us your best guess as to what tagline Time to Meet the Devil comes from. It is a movie that we talked a wee bit about last week. Dave professed his undying love for not only the star, but the director, and his desire to see the film. If you know what film that is from, Time to Meet the Devil, send it off to us in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet your best guess directly at Dave at moviesonup. If you are correct, and if we choose you, you will get a prize package care of Ryan and Dave, or Dave and Ryan, or more specifically, Movies On Up as an entity.
Yeah.
Yep. That's it. Can't tell you when it's going to be, but I can tell you this. If you don't play, you'll never get one.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Absolutely. I think that's a quote from J.R. Smith, isn't it?
And Wayne Gretzky, and whoever you told people when you were wearing that No Fear shirt in second grade.
The Wayne Gretzky quote I like is, don't go where the puck is, go where the puck's going to be. Collectively, we should have been at the movies this weekend, and a movie we should have been at was World War Z, but that's not where the puck was. Where the puck actually was, where it was going to be. I just made a mess of that.
There were a lot more pucks at World War Z than we expected.
Yes, but even more pucks at Monsters University.
Monsters University, a lot of people enrolled to see it this weekend.
Ah, because it was a college.
Yeah. I don't know what I put over under at. Probably in the 90 to 100 range. $82 million for Monsters University. That's the second biggest Pixar opening ever. Not too bad.
Maybe the biggest?
I don't remember. I'm not looking at the numbers right now.
You know what? I will look at the numbers, and I will find the biggest Pixar opening ever, just because.
I might have just made up that it's the second biggest, to be honest with you.
Well, we're going to have that answer.
But we did three over-unders last week. I think the first one, I set Man of Steel either at 40 or 50. If it was 40 and we both took the over, we did awesome, because they saw a steep 65% drop all the way down to $41 million. Word of mouth was pretty strong on that. I thought the drop would be more in the 50-55 range. World War Z, a lot of bad buzz leading up to it, but people stormed out to see it. $66 million for second place. Considering what people were expecting of that.
Or at least what we were expecting.
Yeah, $66 million is...
Armageddon is what we were expecting.
Yeah, I mean, $190 million budget, so they still have a long ways to go, but already greenlit a sequel. There's already going to be a World War Z 2 coming out, but
WWZII.
Yeah, but $66 million, that's a lot more than I expected. I thought I wasn't putting it dead in the water and counting it a bomb,
no
like
pun
after
intended.
Earth. Yeah, but 66, impressive. I think a lot of that's Pitt. It's going to be word of mouth.
I think it's more than Pitt. I think it's
zombies.
I think you can put zombies in anything, and right now that strikes a chord with people. Obviously, I didn't see it. I stayed away because I'm really nervous that it's not. I'm not nervous. I don't care. I didn't make the movie. But, I mean, have you kind of read anything about it? I knew one person that went to see it, and I asked him to let me know, and he didn't do that because he sucks as a person.
Not a bunch. I haven't read a ton about it. I've heard that it's just fun, that it's more fun than you expect, and that it's...
I don't expect any, so if it's fun at all, like, that would be good.
I mean, I didn't read too much about it. I was just shocked that many came out. And then Monsters U at number one with $82 million. So
it was infectious.
Yeah. So that's your 1, 2, and 3 movie were 82, 66, and 41. Another impressive weekend for This Is the End. It only saw a 36% drop down to $13 million. So positive word of mouth did help that one and took care of that one.
Despite my best efforts.
Yeah, you're the only one. So Bling Ring opened a little wider, jumped into 11th place with $2 million. Only on 650 screens, though, so it's doing about 3,000 per screen, which puts it, based on that, puts it right up there among the top three or four. It gets heavy this week. From now on, you have... It's going to get really...
A blockbuster every week, not necessarily once every 2 weeks, every other week.
A couple
or so.
Blockbusters every week. I mean, not even blockbusters, but this week you have a couple that have different audiences. Then you have the fourth next weekend. A lot comes out in a short amount of time now. So That's why, I don't know. I mean, Superman's a big hit. It's already at $210 million, but I'd be a little concerned about that 65% drop because...
I think we were both a little surprised. With the word of mouth, we thought it might be 40%. With the word of mouth from the audience, seemed to be higher than the critic score. But then again, maybe it was just a case where everybody that was into Superman saw it the first week. And I guess to answer your question from before, Monsters, Inc. is the second highest opening for Pixar all time.
Only Monsters behind, University or Monsters?
Yeah, Monsters University. Okay. Second highest opening all time behind Toy Story 3.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. $110 million for Toy Story.
I should have guessed that.
You should have. Who needs a guess when we have the internet at our fingertips? I wasn't listening to you. Did we round out the rest of the top 10?
I didn't round it out. Rounding out the top 5, now you see me still hanging on. It's going to cross $100 million here in a couple of weeks. Then Fast and the Furious at 6. It's at $228 million so far. The Purge in 7th dropped another 57%, but who cares? $60 million. That's 20 times its budget. The Internship, just not. They're not getting the job done. $3.4 million for 8th. Star Trek Into Darkness and Iron Man 3 is still hanging in there at 9 and 10. So they're at 216 and 403, respectively.
Not a bad summer to be a superhero movie. I'm looking at the top 10 right now. We've got Man of Steel in there, Iron Man 3 still in there. Between those two, you're looking at $600 million. I mean, most of that's Iron Man, obviously, but Superman's only been out for a couple weeks. We still have the Wolverine later on this summer, and we've got Kick-Ass later in the year. We also have 50 Shades of Taylor Johnson. Sam Taylor Johnson, the maybe less known of the Taylor Johnson duo, has been tied down as the director of the popular novel adaptation 50 Shades of Grey. She will direct a script by Kelly Marcel. No casting is official yet, but rumor has it Felicity Jones is in play for the female lead, Anastasia Steele. The director's kick-ass husband, Aaron Taylor Johnson, seems unlikely to try for the male lead, Christian Grey.
I think they're going to have trouble getting a legitimate male movie star for the lead of this because it's really not – the subject isn't – any of your good actors I don't think are going to want to jump on this because you're not really doing much except nailing possibly Felicity Jones.
Whomever it is.
But, I think they'll end up with, like, an Ian Somerhalder or somebody like that that's just a pretty face.
What about LaBeouf?
Or Alex Pettifer is a perfect example.
Would dig that.
And I mean, he's the perfect example because he brings nothing to the table that interests guys, but he's a pretty face. Him or Matt Bomer from Magic Mike would be solid choices. But I know it's not made for me. I don't care about this movie.
Not even if Emma Watson changes her mind and decides to.
There was talk of Anna Kendrick as Anastasia Steele, and even that I don't even think could get me.
Really?
I don't know. They're really stupid.
Anna, if you're listening, if you do 50 Shades, I will see it.
I will make up for it later, Anna, because I'm sure you come up.
Once or twice. The Iron Man returns. Robert Downey Jr. and Marvel have agreed on a deal that will see Tony Stark return for the Avengers 2 and 3. Iron Man 4, interestingly enough, not part of that Marvel deal.
Not surprising.
No.
It's disappointing a little bit, but... Iron Man 4 would take a lot more physically out of Robert Downey than Avengers 2 and 3. Because he can kind of dictate how big he wants his role to be and still just collect the paychecks. He said he wanted to be Iron Man until he was 50. I think he's up there now. I think after the second Avengers, he'll be 50. So the end of Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man is coming. Granted, it's 5 or 6 years away, but... Two more movies away.
And I think when we did our Iron Man 3 standalone episode, if you haven't seen Iron Man 3 yet, maybe, I don't know, I'm not going to really spoil it, but plug your ears, I guess. But the way that movie is wrapped up, I mean, you could honestly see kind of his arc, especially his standalone arc, being wrapped up. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but at least for my money, I'd be totally happy with Robert Downey Jr.'s Stark being a very, very limited character in Avengers 2 and 3. They have enough ancillary characters that they could bring in and make larger parts of these movies.
Especially,
going forward.
You're already adding Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch.
But not really. Peter and Wanda.
I'm fine if Iron Man doesn't even show up in Avengers 2. I'm fine if Tony Stark is there.
Yes, exactly.
But no Iron Man.
And even by three, you know, I could see his role being taken care of by Ant-Man, whomever that is.
Yeah, but I mean, three, I think you'd have to, he has to be Iron Man in at least. I could see a slow build to him being Iron Man in three, but it'll be interesting to see where they go with it. They have a plan.
Sure.
Whedon's been adapting so long. I mean, I'm sure if they couldn't have come to a deal, Whedon would figure something out. So
yeah, they'd have found a clever way to write him out or
Get him to come back for a cameo. But it's
right.
It's interesting that it's only two film deal. So yeah, you have no Iron Man 4, probably no cameos, which at this point, does Robert Downey Jr. want to do any cameos?
I mean, and does he need to? Like, his character's, out of all of them, been established the most. I think going forward, you really need him the least.
Yeah.
I like him the most, but I don't want to see him sign on for an Iron Man 4 just because he feels like he has to and then mail it in. I thought what we got from him from the first three Iron Mens was fine. Show up and
say what you will about the quality of the movies. His performance never dipped. Yeah.
Exactly. And I prefer, I mean, I guess it's kind of the not quite the same argument you have with actors that are going to play Batman. You have to essentially play two roles. You know, you've got to play Bruce Wayne, you've got to play Batman, and some are better at one than the other. But I really like Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark. The Iron Man component of that could be anybody.
And that's what I
anything.
Liked about 3 so much, is it was more of a Tony Stark movie.
Exactly.
And that's why I'd be fine if Avengers 2, if Tony Stark is the main key there. I'm fine with that. I'm more interested in Tony Stark than Iron Man.
They've established the fact that Iron Man can essentially be an RC car. You don't need Tony Stark to do that. So, I mean, either way, I think they're set up just fine. Even if there was no Robert Downey Jr., I think with Thor, with Captain America, with Peter and Wanda, with Hawkeye, with the Black Widow, with Nick Fury, with the Hulk, you've got enough. And that's just what we know of now. There could be more stuff coming down the pike. In other superhero news, Mary Jane, not so fast. Despite filming a handful of scenes with Shailene Woodley as Mary Jane Watson, director Mark Webb has decided to cut the role completely out of The Amazing Spider-Man 2 to focus on the relationship between Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy. However, she will be in part 3, which is set to hit theaters in 2016, but whether or not Shailene Woodley, the character of Mary Jane, will be in part 3, but whether or not Shailene Woodley will still be playing that character is up in the air. But if they're going to take her out of 2 to focus on the Peter Parker-Gwen Stacy relationship, why would they put her in 3?
Timing-wise, it screws up. It hurts with Shailene Woodley because she's on the verge of being, you know, she's got a couple movies now that are going to be critical darlings, and then she's got a franchise coming out in March with Divergent. So she's right there. Her star is probably going to balloon. And you're talking 2016. Who knows what her schedule is going to be like? So
if this was the only thing she had and the role got cut, that'd be terrible. But she's got plenty of balls in the air. So if this,
oh, she's fine without it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think she's going to starve. And I think her career is going to take off regardless, one way or the other. If she can work it in to Spider-Man 3, fine. But she's really,
I think she'd be a good Mary Jane, though.
Sure.
But
she's really good at whatever she does.
She is. She's really good. So, I mean, I didn't like the first one. I thought it seemed silly to put Mary Jane in the second one, because if you're building up the Gwen Stacy relationship into the but what's, they have, it's no longer a trilogy. I mean, they have, 2 is 2014. They have 3 and 4 coming out 16 and 18. So they have a 4-movie idea here. So
Depending on what they do, I mean, I think it's not exactly the best kept secret on the internet of, you know, what might happen to Gwen Stacy in this one. If not this one, you would think definitely the third one.
I don't think it'll happen this one.
And if it doesn't, then it makes, you got to at least introduce Mary Jane before the end of Gwen Stacy's arc. And when this was a trilogy, before they'd announced four, it made a lot of sense to do it the way they were doing it. But now I think they have more time. And
plus, it already seems like there's a lot going on.
That they're wedging too many people in.
You have, and that's what happens with superhero sequels.
Yeah.
You already have, you know, Emma Stone and Andrew Garfield. You're throwing Electro, you're throwing Rhino. You still have Oscorp stuff going in there. You're throwing in Harry Osborn, played by Dane DeHaan. Sarah Gahan just joined the cast this week. Felicity Jones is playing a role. So it's like you're throwing in all these characters that, yeah, a lot of them might just be
bit parts
that lead to something. But
you got to keep them straight at some point. So maybe in this instance, less is more. I mean, it's a bummer because, you know, she's really good. She'd have been great in the movie, but I don't think it's going to suffer without her. It sounds like the role was limited enough where if you can cut it out completely, you know, how crucial would it have been if you can kind of cut it?
She's like 10 years younger than Andrew Garfield.
He looks like a young kid. I think he carried the high school thing off well. I mean, about as well as Tobey Maguire did. The guy was like 50. He was on the Robert Downey Jr. track where he's like, I'll be Spider-Man until I'm 50. And that was the end of Spider-Man 3. There can be only one, and it isn't Ryan Reynolds. Reynolds has left the long-in-development Highlander reboot. The project has been without a director since Juan Carlos Frenzadillo departed in November. Now, apparently, Reynolds out the door behind him.
This is one of those projects that's been going on for so long that it's like, yeah, this isn't going to happen. Frenzadillo worked on it for about a year. He had about a year on this movie with Ryan Reynolds attached, and they couldn't get the momentum going so much that he left. And they said in November they were going to replace him. You're 7 months later, 6 months later, and you don't have another director. Why would Reynolds just keep it on his schedule? He's got other offers. He can do this, so it feels like the kind of thing that's not going to do anything, and then they're just going to find a director who has a perfect plan for it, has an actor in mind, and then it'll just happen within, like, real quick. That's how a lot of these things...
There will be a quickening, and it'll just happen.
Oh, my God.
What, are you jealous?
I'm over Highlander now. You just killed it for me.
You know what? I think I've been over Highlander for 15 years. And Interstellar cast gets even more stellar. Casey Affleck is the latest to join the cast of Christopher Nolan's Interstellar. He joins Matthew McConaughey, Anne Hathaway, Jessica Chastain, and Michael Caine, as well as Bill Irwin in this sci-fi adventure.
We talk about like David O. Russell being able to
get whomever
and
he
Paul
wants.
Thomas Anderson being able to just handpick their casts because those actors get nominated for stuff. Christopher Nolan isn't bringing the Oscar noms, but he can take whatever. Like, if Christopher Nolan wants you in his project, nobody's saying no to him. And that cast is awesome. And I like that he mixes it with people he's worked with before and bringing in newcomers. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, we talk a lot about you know, Paul Thomas Anderson and some of these guys that kind of use the same folks a lot. To a certain point, Christopher Nolan's a bit like that, but you hit the nail right on the head where he will supplement that with new people. It's not just like, let's put Bill Murray in it.
Yeah, it's
movie.
Not like a Paul Thomas Anderson where you have seven people that did his last movie and then two new ones.
Yeah.
This is like three or four that did the last movie and like five new ones.
Yeah, I mean, most of the Andersons are like that.
Yeah.
PTA, Wes Anderson.
Which I'm not going to complain. If you find somebody with a working relationship that you like, I mean, look at David O. Russell and Marky Mark.
Yeah.
So we still call him Marky Mark.
You still call him Marky Mark.
But, I mean, I'm fine with that because, you know.
Scorsese with De Niro for a while. More recently, DiCaprio. Yeah, it happens, but movie looks good. I can remember when we were really doing a lot with 12 Years a Slave. That was another one that, like, every time we did an update on the casting, it just kept getting
better. And what's nuts is that guy hasn't, he's had good buzz, but he hasn't gotten the award nomination. Like, Shame should have, you know, and Hunger, but that cast is awesome. And I'm sure we'll see a trailer for that soon.
I would say it's just about due. This week in Anna Kendrick news, but let me just right up front say this is not, everyone relax. This is not the last time. It's not the first time, and it's not the last time Miss Kendrick will come up in this episode. But if we can put her about the beginning and the middle and the end of every show, I think that's been a successful episode. Filming this week has begun on the Anna Kendrick, Jeremy Jordan musical adaptation of The Last 5 Years. The lovely Angel has also signed on to share her beauty and her voice and her talent with the cast of Into the Woods, where she will play Cinderella, of course she will, in a cast that already includes Chris Pine, Jake Gyllenhaal, Johnny Depp, Meryl Streep, Emily Blunt, Tracy Ullman, and Christine Baranski.
I'm not into musicals at all, but
I am now.
Into the Woods is shaping up nicely. I like that cast a lot, and it's not your typical musical cast. I mean, Johnny Depp, yeah, he's done one, but Jake Gyllenhaal, Chris Pine, Anna Kendrick, Emily Blunt, the story seems interesting enough.
I don't care what the story. I really don't care. I'm getting to the point, and I am with there are several actors that if they're in something, I will go see it. She's one of them now. I don't care. Very rarely have I been disappointed. I kind of feel like
you haven't seen Rapture Palooza yet,
right? That's coming, and I have a feeling. I got a bad feeling about this, but I'm willing to, you know, the batting average will still be high enough that I will give the other ones a try. There's no reason I should have liked Pitch Perfect.
I loved Pitch
but
Perfect.
But I did, yeah. So I guess she's earned a pass in my book. She's got another one coming out that we probably will talk about later that I think actually does look legitimately good and like a movie that I would be more likely to see. But I'll give the musicals a chance. She can sing, too. It's not just...
Beautiful voice.
Of course. And why wouldn't she? Of course he is. In a not surprising but likely untrue rumor, The Rock, or Dwayne Johnson, as he is known, will be approached about teaming up with Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator 5. Other T5 rumors this week suggest that it will be set in the 40s or 50s, with Sarah Connor's parents being targeted, and that Nikki Winding Rain or Justin Lin will be offered the directing gig. One or the other. Those two, I often get them confused.
This is such a, like, this week it was just like, let's throw The Rock one. That sounds believable.
I can see that, yeah.
And the studio, make it happen, they're going to make it happen.
Why wouldn't you?
Because he saves franchises.
Yes.
But then
he's best in sequels where he's not in the original.
Yes. I mean, he comes into franchises that he wasn't involved in and saves them. So
ask Justin Lin.
Yeah. So bring him into Terminator 5. The director one made me laugh because
yes,
Nicholas Winding Refn is an awesome choice, but different. Justin Lin makes sense.
Yeah.
Especially since they went McGee for the last one. So I mean, Justin Lin is that he's got that blockbuster scope. He won't add a lot of depth to it. There will be a lot of punches.
But, I mean, with the Fast and the Furious, people seem to like that. So he absolutely could. It just seems so strange that your choice is either Nikki Winding Refn, which would be great, but I can't fathom why he would do it, and Justin Lin. I feel like it'd be like, oh, we have a project in mind that we're either going to take Antoine Fuqua or Michael Bay. I guess it's a 50-50 shot between either of them.
It's not like saying we can get either Christopher Nolan or James Wan. It's just like, I don't know. But the whole 40s and 50s rumor, that would be ridiculous.
I just hope.
That would be insane. And you know what? I'd be interested.
I would like to see like 40s because it would just be awesome to see like Gangster Squad, but with the Terminator in it, because that maybe would have saved that movie, I think.
I don't even think that could have saved it.
Had they
movie.
Put Dwayne Johnson as a cyborg robot punching Josh Brolin, I think that would have been it. I think we'd have a hit. Sony looking to have a hit with Too Bad, Too Teacher. They have locked down director Jake Kasdan and are working out a deal with Cameron Diaz for Bad Teacher 2. Blacklist writer Justin Mallon has already written a script.
I skipped the first one, but it just seems like overkill because it's like they have this idea that's not even that creative of an idea to begin with, and they just want to beat it into the ground. Because you still have a 13-episode mid-season replacement coming to CBS starring Ari Grainer. So, I mean, you're going to go movie, TV show, unrelated sequel.
The first one was all right. I mean, there are a lot of movies that are just all right, and they get a sequel. And there are a lot of bad ones that get a sequel. I'm not ready to just kind of condemn this, but it does seem a little strange that you've got essentially a movie franchise and a TV franchise that are kind of going to be going on at the same time and are completely unrelated.
Yeah, I accept it's the same concept, same people behind them.
Although, I mean, I guess, you know, you could have the characters don't have to be the same. The idea of a poorly behaving teacher, I guess, could be universal. And it wouldn't be weird if none of the characters crossed over. I guess that'd be all right. But
And there was no talk of Timberlake or Siegel.
Which, Timberlake, his role, I could take it or leave it. But
they
Jason
didn't even
Siegel
promote him
was
in
really
that movie.
Good. No, they didn't. And I think he'll be okay if he doesn't end up in Bad Teacher 2, I think. Speaking of garbage, One Studios trash, less than a week after having the plug pulled by Warner Brothers, Dumb and Dumber 2, that's T-O, has found funding in the duo of Universal and Red Granite. We kind of mentioned that Red Granite was looking to pick it up. That's the guys behind Horns, The Wolf of Wall Street, some
a
stuff.
A lot of good stuff.
Yeah, that looks really, really good. And then there's this. Stars Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels will return, as well as the Farrelly brothers, to direct. Filming begins this August for a summer 2014 release.
This was all pretty much broke on the Nerdist podcast. Chris Hardwick had an interview with the Farrelly brothers. They referred to the script as a masterpiece. It just... everything about
I feel like
this,
you kind of got to take that with a grain of salt.
You gotta change the title. You gotta just kill it. The fact they're filming in...
That went from change the title to not make the movie.
Who needs this movie? Who wants this movie? And they're saying stuff like, oh, it'll make you appreciate the first one more.
Does that mean it's going to be awful?
I don't know. I was so happy last week because I thought, oh, Dumb and Dumber 2 is not happening. There are good decision makers in Hollywood. And then this.
A decision that seemingly is made by a company that makes good decisions. So, you know, it's easy to sit here and say, this is going to be garbage. And I feel like there's an overwhelming likelihood that it will be. But... The Farrellys seem pretty high on it. That doesn't really mean a lot. But I want to give Red Granite, those seem like smart people. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt.
And I can't really fault them. They're going to make it for about $30, $35 million. It's hard to see that not making that.
Yeah, and maybe it's just a financial decision for them. And that they feel like there's a very strong... I mean, in the end, that's what the movies are supposed to do. Supposed to make money. It doesn't, I mean, I don't want to sound cynical and say it doesn't matter whether they're good or not, because if, you know, the better they are, obviously, the better chance you have of making back your investment. But I don't feel like this is necessarily just a business decision. There's got to be something there that they like.
There, yeah.
So maybe it'll be okay.
I'm not holding out hope.
I've been holding out hope. I've been holding my breath with this movie for, I don't know, like approaching 10 years. Sin City, a date to wait for. Sin City 2 that was set to release on October 4th, and I was so looking forward to it, has been moved to August 22nd. Not moved up. Moved to August 22nd next year.
11 months.
Damn it.
Yeah, so this movie took forever to get off the ground, and then it's like, oh, you could taste it. No, you can't.
We talked a bit about when they finally put the date for this. Have they waited too long? You talk about a project's momentum being killed. I think they've done that 9 times over with Sin City. But
the weird thing is that's a better release date. For this kind of movie, putting it out in late August sets it up to make a lot more money than early October. So, in a way, it's good, but you're waiting another 10 months.
Wasn't the first one an
October release?
It was an October
one, yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I mean, August, you're kind of at the tail end of the summer movie season.
Crap makes money in September. Traditionally, September is just garbage movies. So, if you put something out good in late August, you have a good 2 or 3 week run where you're bringing in money.
Yeah, it just seems very strange. I don't know if this was just we don't want to compete with what we've got in October this year. Or
that doesn't cause 11-month
No,
backup.
It doesn't. That's what makes me nervous is that there's a reason that it got pushed back, and I don't know what it is.
I mean, oh, something else is open in the fourth. We don't want to deal with it. Okay,
go earlier. Move it back 2 months, yeah.
But 10 months, that to me, that looks like effects or something.
And it would be a very effects-driven movie. I just hope it's not a scripting thing. With World War Z this week, that was one that got pushed back so much because the ending had to be redone.
That ended up back like a year and a half.
Yeah, long time. And I just hope that that's not the same thing. I didn't care about World War Z. I care about this. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe by the time next year comes around, I won't. That's a long time. But there it is. Just have to wait until August 22nd of 2014. Final news story is also a bit of a bummer, actually quite a bit of a bummer. Last week, just about after we wrapped our show, we got the news that James Gandolfini had passed away on vacation at the age of 51. He's a guy that is always going to be known for his work on The Sopranos as the patriarch of that family, Tony Soprano. But, you know, obviously us being a movie show, I would say I've never seen 10 minutes of The Sopranos, so I really can't speak to his work on that. I mean, obviously, you know, very, very good from everything I've heard, but the guy's movie career, even if he had never shot an episode of The Sopranos.
I tweeted that exact same thing last week when it happened, was that even if you take away The Sopranos, he has had an awesome career. Just his movies. I mean, and recently, he was in Zero Dark Thirty last year, where he was really good. Killing Them Softly, which, say what you will about the movie, he wasn't what was wrong with that movie. Violet and Daisy, which haven't seen yet, want to, and he looks awesome in that. But True Romance, Where the Wild Things Are, In the Loop. I mean, his movie resume is just impressive.
I hesitate to use the term character actor for him because that has sort of a negative connotation. But he seemed like...
He had a role that he excelled at.
And he was okay with playing it. And
yeah.
He wasn't one of these guys that decided, hey, I need to be, you know, break out of this typecasting. Like, he embraced his role and he was really, really good at it.
But you know, when he did want to break out from it, he did well. Welcome to the Rileys with him and Kristen Stewart. That's a really good movie. And he's not just your tough guy. He's going through a divorce and decides to just care for this hooker. Like, just try to make her life better. And it's, he could do more if he wanted to, but everything he did, he was so good in. 8mm, The Mexican, like, I mean, you could go through his whole career and just everything he did, he was so awesome in.
One of the interesting stories I had heard about Gandolfini was actually on the Dan Patrick Show. It was the morning that morning after he had passed. He was a Jersey guy, and he had worked really, really hard to lose his Jersey accent so that he could kind of do other roles. And then he was cast in The Sopranos and had to get a dialect coach to get his accent back.
And that's the thing, is you can hear, if you look at podcasts or just Google image or Google search for blogs, you'll see so many great stories about him, because even though he was this big, gruff,
intimidating
guy, like, everything you hear is just about how genuine and nice and loving and caring that he was, and how he was just the total opposite of everything he played, which makes it even that much more impressive that this nice guy is playing Tony Soprano. And it's sad. He had a TV show coming out on HBO that was going to be a big deal. He's in Animal Rescue, the Tom Hardy movie with Noomira Pace. So he was still, it wasn't like he's on the downturn of his career. He was still in it. Like, he's still making high quality stuff
and
still doing awesome.
A relatively young man at 51. I mean, that's, it is a shame. It's a shame for, you know, not only his family, just not having him around anymore. But I feel like, as people that, you know, genuinely enjoy movies and good work and TV as well, you know, that he had a lot more left in the tank to contribute. And that's, you know, when you see folks that go what seemingly before their time, it's interesting when they still have some things in the can, and you know that this is going to be, you know, essentially the final chances you have to really see any of his work new. So I think it'll give you kind of a greater appreciation for some of the stuff that I think he's got, like 3 or 4 movies in the can that are going to be coming out. Animal Rescue, you mentioned he's got Violet and Daisy, which isn't out yet, but that one seems like it's been wrapped for a while. A couple more movies left, so definitely check those out. The Sopranos has always been a show that eventually I feel like I'll have to go back and see.
It's really good.
I'm sure
it is. I mean, I'm not breaking any news there.
Yeah, however really many good. Millions of people can't really be wrong. So that was kind of a sad news we got last week. James Gandolfini passed away at the age of 51. I suspect, I do more than suspect, seeing our watch This Is for the Week, this might not be the last time we talk about Mr. Gandolfini this episode. But it will be the last news story that we have for this episode. I'm going to start this week's trailer section with, I think we should try and start it every week with a candidate for the McAvoy turn. And I think unwittingly, you've done that very thing with the second trailer for Prince Avalanche. It is no secret that Dave hates Emil Hirsch, hates him, wants to punch his face. But I got to believe that after the second trailer and after actually seeing this Emil Hirsch, Paul Rudd joint directed by David Gordon Green, that Dave is in fact going to have a McAvoy turn for Mr. Hirsch.
It looks really good.
Yeah, it does.
I like that it's Paul Rudd not being Paul Rudd, really. I mean, to an extent.
A bit more serious?
It's not your smooth, charming Paul Rudd. Like, it's just loser, loner Paul Rudd. And I like this from David Gordon Green. This is, I've said it before, it's a mix between George Washington and Your Highness. Like, it's that middle ground between the two, which I'm excited to see. Like, everything about this movie excites me, even with Emil Hirsch in there. And based on the trailer, it doesn't look like he's going to take me out of it.
So maybe I'm jumping the gun on the McAvoy turn, because that's not glowing praise for Emil Hirsch.
No, I mean, he looks good.
He hate the movie.
If I like the movie, it's going to be a large part because of him, because it's so much just him
and
Rudd.
Paul
so
Rudd.
If I dislike the movie, it's probably going to be because of him. If I like it, he's going to have to be a big part of it. So based on the trailer, I'm leaning more towards I'm going to like this movie a lot.
Fair enough. About 50% Paul Rudd for Prince Avalanche, a lower percent in Anchorman, The Legend Continues. We've had teasers for a couple months, about the same teaser, really. Finally got a full-blown trailer, I believe it was late last week, and I got to admit, this is one that's, for me, the expectations are pretty high. But I thought the trailer was really, really good. Comes in under 2 minutes, which is a plus for me. And this is one that, you know, really could have gone on way too long, given away way too much. But good for them for giving you just enough. You know why Ron and the rest of his team are back. You know when they're back. And you get to see his rival in this one, which is Marsden. I'm pleased as punch with that. This trailer, keep it simple, stupid. And they did. And I was really happy.
It'd be easy to blow the wad and show a lot of the cameos. They showed some. Not all of them, so that was cool. I wasn't nuts about the first Anchorman. I know I'm in the minority there, and I've fallen into the hype of Anchorman 2, like, oh, this is going to be good. And then I watch it, and it's like, oh, it's Anchorman again. So,
Anchorman in a different decade.
Yeah, so it's going to have good laughs, but I can't say I'm overwhelmingly excited for it.
I don't know that overwhelmingly excited is the word, but generally for comedies, I try not to go into them thinking they're going to be really, really funny. And then if I'm pleasantly surprised, that's the case. This one, I do feel like it has laughs in it. I know it will. It's just a question of how many. I can say there's probably going to be zero laughs for me. And the Smurfs, too. Apparently, double the mini mayhem. Gargamel in this one, Hank Azaria, has created his own Smurf-type creatures, and apparently they're a-holes, real jerks, but they're not blue, and apparently that's a problem. So Gargamel and these whatever
grays?
Whatever they're called, yeah, grays?
Gurfs?
I don't know, have decided that if they are to Smurfnap, Smurfette, she's going to tell them there's some kind of secret formula that maybe makes Smurfs blue, so maybe they don't start life as blue? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't care.
It's going to blow. I like NBH.
Sure.
I like Jayma Mays enough. I like Hank Azaria, but this is just, I feel sad watching Hank Azaria in this because the jokes are so lazy. Like, by the end of the trailer, you realize 100% what Gargamel's role in these movies are. Like, by the last joke, it's predictable. I mean, you know that's going to happen. And it just, there's actually decent voice talent involved. And I just, it looks so, it's lowest common denominator. But you know what? Kids are going to like it.
Probably.
But this is the old style of making kids' movies, where as long as kids make it, as long as kids like it, you're golden. No, Pixar changed that. Like, you can make a great kids' movie that parents want to go see two or three times.
Pixar, I think DreamWorks has done some similar things.
Yeah, I mean,
there's plenty of, and I feel like there might be an example coming up later, but there's plenty of examples you can point to on how you can make a kids' movie that kids really like.
That adults don't hate.
Right, exactly.
That's the first step. You can make one that adults love, but you got to get one that adults don't hate first. Because I look at the Spurs 2 trailer and it's like, maybe when it's on DVD, my kids will see it. Like, maybe. I don't want to sit through it.
Yeah, you would suggest something else.
And I'm the one buying the tickets.
Right.
So you need to get me in the seats. Like, I don't care how much a kid laughs at the trailer. You got to get me to at least not feel like I'm going to want to gouge my eyes out for 2 hours.
And there's always, there will be somebody else that will get that right. And the kids don't, they just want to go see a movie. Maybe they want to see the Smurfs, but I feel like you can probably manipulate your kids into seeing, you know, hopefully not Freebirds instead, because I think that looks equally as crappy. Owen Wilson's a turkey. Woody Harrelson is a turkey. They go back in time to the first Thanksgiving, so as not to have turkeys on the menu for that holiday. It comes out in November, make some money, period.
I love the concept. I love the time-traveling turkeys to go back and make sure turkeys aren't at the first Thanksgiving. That's a brilliant concept. It doesn't look like it's executed well. It feels like they're taking this, like, not kind of high concept idea and lowest common denominatoring it, but yeah, I just, nothing about it looks, it looks terrible.
Yes.
If only there were somebody to show us how to make like a good trailer for an animated movie.
And there might be. Leave it to the mouse. Disney, not Disney Pixar, Disney on its own, has got a trailer out this week for Frozen, also releases this Thanksgiving. And this is a great trailer. It plays like a Pixar short in that it's just kind of a scene from the movie. There's no setup. There's nothing about the plot. It's just two characters, a snowman and a reindeer.
The thing is, and I don't even think it's a – it feels like Paper Man, the yeah. award-winning short from last year where it's, yeah, here's two characters. I don't know their roles in the movie. I don't care. They could be small, but you're bringing me into this world, and I'm into it. You're not, you know, showing me one-liners. You're not trying to hit me over the head with plot. I know what Frozen is now. I have an idea of it, and I want to see it.
And it's just one scene.
I know nothing. That might not even be in the movie. Like, yeah. It doesn't seem like something that's in the movie. It just seems like a short film made in that world to make me want to see the movie, and it worked.
It worked tremendously. And there's, again, like some of the Pixar shorts, there's no dialogue. It's just a scene that plays out
honestly,
between a snowman and a
I just fact-checked you. Because
I know you did. I saw the
because
look on your
face. I thought for sure this was Disney Pixar.
It's not.
It's just Disney.
Yeah. And so. They're okay. They've done some work outside of Pixar recently that's just been fine.
So,
but this does seem very much in the style of a Pixar short. And those are so good. And this is how you can do a trailer without giving away the entire movie.
It was short.
Yeah. It was about a minute 45, which is fine. It gives you the tone. That's all you need from a trailer is give me the tone of the movie. That's what this does. No plot, no nothing. It's just the tone, and I'm cool with it.
And it's not epic. They're not trying to sell me on the voice cast.
Right. I think I ended up looking to see who.
I think Kristen Bell.
Yeah. She was kind of the first one that was listed on there. But I don't care. I'm not going to go see this movie for the cast. I'm going to go see it because it looks kind of neat. They do sell Ashton Kutcher as Steve Jobs a lot in the trailer for Jobs. They try to. Essentially, you get the entire story from the conception of Apple all the way through jobs getting fired and coming back.
To getting begged to come back.
The only thing they didn't show was that he dies. Spoiler alert, Steve Jobs dies. I mean, I don't feel like any of this is news necessarily, but I guess I would have liked to see, and I don't know what I'd like to see more in the trailer.
I don't think a trailer could sell me on this. I don't think there's anything you could do to sell me
Ashton Kutcher
as Steve Jobs.
Yeah, I think you're either on board because you want to see a Steve Jobs movie, or you're on board because you're a Kutcher fan, or...
I wouldn't be anti a Steve Jobs movie. I just don't want it combined with an Ashton Kutcher movie.
It feels like they tried to go with a Social Network vibe, but with none of the people capable of carrying that out.
When one of the people from Social Network is writing a separate Steve Jobs movie.
Exactly. That's kind of off base, I think. We talked a bit about Magic last week, which is Michael Cera trying not to be cast as Michael Cera. To paraphrase Obi-Wan Kenobi, this is the Michael Cera you're looking for. It's him being him in the Crystal Fairy and maybe the Magical Cactus. I'm not sure if they've dropped the cactus part.
No, they're on the hunt for a magical cactus.
Well, no. I'm not sure if they've dropped that from the title.
Oh,
of the
title
movie.
Is just Crystal Fairy.
Yeah, I've seen it both ways recently.
The official title is just Crystal Fairy.
Fair enough. Michael Cera is looking for this magical cactus so he can trip his balls off, and what he finds is a hairy Gabby Hoffman who plays Crystal Fairy.
I like Michael Cera, but this trailer didn't do anything for me.
It tries to kind of give you the vibe of, hey, this is going to be an indie darling. It's an offbeat kind of a love story, maybe. The thing that I did like about this is it is Michael Cera, and it is very similar to what he normally does, except you would normally expect him to, throughout the entire trailer, be trying to get with this girl. But he's not.
He's trying to get away from her.
He's doing the exact opposite, which I think is a more intelligent way to try and break typecast as opposed to trying what he's doing, whatever it is that he's doing in Magic.
Between this and Magic, like, I like Michael Cera, but you're making it hard to keep up with your filmography because neither of these two am I very interested in.
We're both interested in Drinking Buddies, and to me, this absolutely looks like a Lynn Shelton movie, but 100% better. Because it has Anna Kendrick. And there's some other people in the movie, too, but really, who cares? It's Anna Kendrick, a beard, a guy that was in a movie from, like, the late 2000s, and some chick that Dave doesn't like.
I'm growing on her.
On
Olivia Wilde, Jake Johnson, who I love, Anna Kendrick, who I love, and then Ron Livingston, who I don't hate, directed by Joe Swanberg, which is a weird choice there. This trailer was not what I was expecting. I followed this movie. Like, I mean, we talked about casting news.
Why wouldn't we?
And you talk about, you know, Olivia Wilde, Ron Livingston, Jake Johnson, Anna Kendrick. I'm thinking this is just like a straight up comedy.
No.
A little bit more to it than that.
Yeah.
It looks like it has its moments, but it looks good. It looks a lot different than I expected it, but it didn't turn me off of it.
Yeah, I mean, it does. I said specifically Lynn Shelton because it seems like it might have sort of a Your Sister's Sister kind of vibe, wherein there's that weird, I don't know if it's quite a love triangle. The trailer I find confusing, really the first part of the trailer, where it's just Olivia Wilde kind of running a brewery, I thought that worked really, really well. And then things got confusing once we started adding the rest of the characters. Maybe that was the point of the trailer, but I don't want to be confused. You can't clear it up for me in the trailer. You can in the movie, but not in the trailer.
Yeah, there was a lot. Like, it was one of those where just set up that it's two couples and that Olivia Wilde and Jake Johnson are best friends. That's all I need. I don't need this other, is Ron Livingston and Anna Kendrick going to hook up? I don't need any of that.
Is Olivia Wilde going to hook up with Jake Johnson, who apparently is...
has a beard and a trucker hat, so he's clearly a brewer.
Yeah, a good trailer, but...
It's a good trailer. I still...
A good trailer, but not spectacular, is what I was getting at.
And I guess I was expecting spectacular.
We did get a spectacular trailer for The Spectacular Now, and I'm okay with this. This is kind of one of those festival darlings that we talked about, Shailene Woodley being cut from Spider-Man 2. She is the female lead in this, and getting a lot of love for her performance. And I'm sure the kid's a good actress, and this looks like it'd be a good role for her. But I just it looks to me like a better crafted version of like a Rachel Lee Cook movie from the late 90s, where
a little bit
you're supposed to believe that guys at school don't find this girl attractive. And I can't buy it. They don't even like try and put glasses on her.
I mean, she's frumped up a little bit, but she's still
a little bit.
She's still a good looking girl.
Yes.
Like, I think it's going to be good though. She looks amazing, but Miles Teller is a weird choice for a leading man.
It's hard to buy him as the uber popular kid, I guess, but we're supposed to.
I haven't seen him in enough, but he doesn't look like your typical leading man. But in the trailer, I bought it.
The kid seems like
he's
not
what
do
you
really
expect
well.
To see as a leading man, but it looked like I bought it, and I just think it's going to be good. The material looks like it's going to give him and her a lot of room to shine.
Yeah.
And I know she's capable of it. So I'm excited. I think it'll be good. I think the trailer was really good.
And, I mean, a lot of buzz coming out like Sundance and stuff. So not to say that everything that does well there ends up being awesome. But I feel like millions of people can't be wrong, right?
It looks good. It looks spectacular.
It's spectacular.
And it doesn't give away. It shows a lot in the trailer, but not a ton.
It doesn't. You don't know how the story's going to end.
Yeah, you don't know the typical arc of the story. So
it definitely builds to something. Our next movie absolutely builds to something. Legos, the Lego movie. I saw this on there, and I know who's involved. Knowing who's involved, Morgan Freeman, Chris Pratt, I thought, okay. I was nervous. And then after watching the trailer, I kind of think it's going to be fun.
Good Lord. I was anti-Lego movie. I thought, how can you make a good Lego movie? They get Phil Lord and Chris Miller involved. I liked Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Mm-hmm. There's a part of me that liked 21 Jump Street a lot. So I'm into it, and I was interested to see what they could do with it. Man, this trailer. It's a good trailer.
It really is.
Like, it's a good. I was willing to give it a shot, and I went from this trailer made me go from I'll give it a shot to I cannot wait for this movie. I mean that's quite a leap, and I loved it. Like the Chris Pratt, it's just
perfect for this kind of humor. I mean all the Lego stuff from the games, it's very kind of slapsticky, offbeat, and he's awesome for that. Just I think he's going to do really, really well.
The last joke in the trailer is just so funny. And it's just like, okay, I'll take a movie of that. Then you got the Will Arnett as Batman and Superman and all them showing up.
This is the Justice League movie.
It's going to be so good. It looks amazing. Because you know what? The Lego Batman movie, it's a little wacky. It got a little too much for me at times. This looks like it's got a nice balance.
I like the Star Wars one.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be just funny.
And it's very self-referential. I mean, it's when they introduce all the Legos that are around,
yes.
That's there's a couple good
there's a lot of good jokes in the trailer.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. I was really apprehensive, but this is a way, you know, that a trailer can I kind of know, I think, what the movie's about, but I don't care. There's enough there that I think this will be fun. I get the tone. That's all I want from a trailer. Just give me the tone and let me decide if it's something I want to see. And they did well enough in this one to decide that I want to see it. Will I want to see The Heat and White House Down? We've been bombarded with TV spots for them over the past several weeks. White House Down, especially watching the NBA.
You know
finals.
What? I wasn't sold on White House Down until they got NBA superstar Bruce Bowen to show up. Like, you saw, that made no sense to me.
No.
But The Heat, I think, looks funny. I don't know what it is about. Maybe it's just Melissa McCarthy, but there's so many different TV spots for The Heat, and they all make me laugh. I think her and Sandra Bullock are going to be a nice combo. I'm actually excited to see that one.
I think so, too. I mean, she's Sandy Bullock is funny on her own, but I feel like she can kind of play the straight man to Melissa McCarthy and allow her to be over the top, but not make it nauseating because they're both not trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, and I think it looks funny. And White House Down, I think it'll be fun. I don't think I want to rush out and see it.
No.
I want to see it eventually, but I can wait for DVD.
Yeah, over under.
I don't even know because
it's a tough one.
Monsters U is going to carry over. You still got Superman, although that's fallen faster than expected.
Speeding Bullet.
Who knows what World War Z is going to do? Let's do 40 for both of them each.
I'll take the over on the Heat.
I think I am too, just because I think Melissa McCarthy appeals to...
I mean, Identity Thief did really, really well.
And it didn't look good. This looks funny.
And it was in a time where it's a little bit harder to have, you know, that really big opening weekend. People are now going to see movies.
Plus, you know what? This is something that it appeals to, you know, it's not a chick flick per se, but I could see a girlfriend seeing it and be like, oh, I want to see that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look unbearable that the guys will be like, all right. Like, it's still a buddy cop comedy. So, I mean,
yeah,
there's
exactly.
Still familiar territory there. So, in my gut, 40 is very conservative for
I think
one.
So.
I mean, I have high hopes for that movie, and I think it's going to do very, very well. I'm taking the over on that.
Yeah, we'll both take the over for 40 on the Heat. White House Down. I'm going to take the under.
Take the under.
I feel like that's mid-30s.
It's crowded out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of...
You still got World War Z. That's an action. You still got your Superman. That's an action.
I mean, This Is the End is still bringing in... That's still going to take some. That's going to take some of your male audience still.
Yeah.
We just saw Olympus Has Fallen.
That's what I was going to say is it's seemingly very similar to this. Maybe not as comedic, I guess, more straight up shoot you in your face. I'm sure there'll be some folks shot in the face in this.
Because, I mean, this is also essentially just a buddy movie.
Yeah.
One of them happens to be the president. Channing Tatum is hot right now. Channing Tatum, I don't know. I'm taking over.
Okay.
Over
so
on
you
both.
Want over on both. I'll take over on the Heat, under on White House Down. A movie we definitely both should have taken the under on will be out on DVD this week. That is The Incredible Burt Wonderstone. Also, The Call, Phantom, Upside Down, and Into the White.
No, nothing to say this week. Upside
The Call,
Down.
That was the Halle Berry one.
Yeah,
right?
That actually made a lot of money from WWE Studios.
WWE Studios.
Burt Wonderstone, one of James Gandolfini's most recent works. Phantom, I know nothing about that. I remember when that movie opened, it's like, oh, I don't know what that movie is. I never did research. Still don't know.
Don't care.
Yeah.
It's on DVD. So if
Into the White,
why
that's
it
the
now,
is that the Vanessa Hudgens, John Cusack one that we talked about the trailer
where
for?
She's a stripper?
Yeah.
No,
it's the Rupert. It's the one, the Rupert Everett one from Harry Potter. The trailer.
Is she the redheaded one?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
We watched the trailer a long time ago.
And I probably didn't like it.
Yeah, it didn't look good. You had something to say about it, but I forget what it was.
It probably wasn't anything good.
And then Upside Down just didn't look any good. Like, it's a weak.
Bad week for DVDs, but that's okay, because Dave and I have got your back, as we normally do, with a couple movies, anything we each have to, that you can take a watch that should be. I feel like mine, actually, all four of these movies are good, but they share a theme, and that is James Gandolfini. I had a feeling we were going to end up doing this anyway, just pick a couple movies of his to spotlight.
Yeah, and I mean, yours are more supporting roles, both awesome movies. Mine, I mentioned earlier, Welcome to the Rileys. He tried to do something a little different there, and it worked. It's a really, really good movie. Really, there's a lot of heart there. Plus, he's still Gandolfini, and he's just so fun to watch there. And that, it's a nice reminder that, oh, Kristen Stewart's talented. Like, when she can put her head into something, she's actually really talented. And then Where the Wild Things Are. That movie, it got a lot of crap when it came out, and it kind of...
I liked it.
I loved it, and a lot of it was his performance. I thought he was so good, and he gave that movie a lot of heart. That it just his performance was so good and almost worth watching just for that.
Both of those are good. Mine are a bit more supporting roles, and I feel like his character in True Romance very much maybe led to his character as Tony Soprano. He's very, very good in that movie. The fight scene he has with Patricia Arquette is one of my favorites. I feel like that's probably got to be a list that's coming up here shortly as favorite fight scenes. I want to do
just a True Romance episode.
Oh, that would be a good one.
I don't see how we could. It's such a good movie.
That is. I'm a honk for Tarantino. That's, I think, some of his best writing.
I think it's his best written movie.
I think you're probably...
I think so, just because... From a storytelling standpoint, it wasn't his most creative, his most original, but from a point A to point B.
You understand the whole way?
He didn't out Tarantino himself.
Right.
He wanted to tell a story from A to B and not go nonlinear, and he nailed it. It was so well written and well done.
The cast was really, really strong, but in small parts. Even Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt was
really
amazing.
Good.
Yeah,
and Gandolfini was very, very good as his role as kind of the heavy. He also shows up in one of my favorite, I guess it's a thriller kind of
horror. It's my favorite Denzel movie.
It's Fallen, and I think it's one that doesn't get a lot of mentions, and I don't know why, because Denzel's really good. John Goodman's really good in
that movie. I love that movie so much.
It's really, really awesome. About a cop trying to hunt down...
It's hard to sum up in a log line. Like, it's just a really good movie.
But Gandolfini is really good in that as well. Along with everybody else, he's awesome because he'll get in these casts that are really, really good, and he will absolutely hold his own in them. And I think that's...
That was my thing when I first watched Zero Dark Thirty, is he has that scene where it's like him and Jason Clarke. I forget everybody in this, but there's like five... actors in that room at the same time that are all at the top of what they do, and it's just like, this is what movie making is. Like, this is what movies should be, is just all these actors and they're doing their thing, not trying to overshadow each other, and just doing what they're asked to do and nailing it. And that's what he always did.
And you mentioned not overshadowing. That's from True Romance. The one of the scenes that everybody talks about is the Sicilian scene. With Walken, and he's just standing in the background the whole time, and he has a couple acknowledgments during it, but that's something that it would be very easy to kind of overact and really play up when you do finally get involved, and he doesn't. He realizes what the point of that scene is, and he lets it happen. He's really good.
Even in Killing Them Softly, which I know Ryan hated the movie.
I hate
but
that movie.
The subtleties, the subtle stuff he does, like there's a subtlety to James Gandolfini that you don't expect because of the kind of figure he is and the kind of roles he plays. There's a lot of subtle stuff that if you're not paying attention for it, and if you're not looking for it, you miss. And it's just like, that's why he's so good, and he was so great. And yeah, it sucks for his family, but it's hard not to get selfish. It's like, I won't get to see him act again. Like, I won't get to watch him act for another 20 years and see 75-year-old James Gandolfini, what he's doing, which that's a bummer. But, I mean, go back. We gave you Fallen, True Romance, Welcome to the Rileys, Where the Wild Things Are.
Go to everything.
That's only a part. Go to his IMDb page. He's uncredited in Last Boy Scout. I mean, just... everything that the guy did was so good.
We mentioned a couple minutes ago about The Heat and how it's essentially a buddy cop movie. It's also kind of like a female-female, a movie with two strong female leads, which you don't see quite that often. Dave and I, in our discussion episode that'll be up later in the week, are going to give you our top five movies with a female-female duo. It's hard to pigeonhole them as comedies because not all mine are comedies. I don't know what Dave's done, but...
We'll talk more about the list because this one was a fun one to do. So
This one was hard. You mentioned your last week's was hard. This one I had trouble with.
It was interesting. It was hard, but once I got rolling, it was like I had trouble coming up with five or six, but then by the time I had six or seven, I had 20. So... it'll be fun to see. So tune in later this week for our favorite female buddies. Until then, hit us up, moviesonup.com, moviesonup@gmail.com, Twitter @moviesonup, facebook.com/moviesonup. Check us out on iTunes. If you listen on iTunes, rate us, review us, whatever you want to do.
That'd be great.
And we're on Stitcher, so.
All the ways you can get the show.
Yeah, so. That's it.
Get another one later on the week.
Yep, so we'll see you later this week with our favorite girl stuff.
Until then,
keep it up.